So National Signing Day has come and gone, and Georgia is coming up, but we hope you pretend we're football for the next hour as we talk basketball. I'm your host, Will Bazer, and I'm joined alongside by Johnna Brashear and Tim Preston. You guys listen to the Hornscast channel. It's the Hornscast channel. We are with always what you're listening to right now. So Texas just got done decimating Grand Canyon University. They're on to Providence, but there was a big announcement about a new arena for the Longhorns. So we're going to go ahead and talk about that. But before we get into everything about the show, I just want a little PSA here. The music we have is from the Budos Band. They are a great band out of Austin here, and I love their music. I do it so that they can get, you know, when people ask, oh, what's your music? I can say, oh, yeah, go ahead and check these guys out. So if you want to get your music on the intro of this show, or you have a friend whose music you want to get on the intro of this show, go ahead and send it to me. Or, you know, send it on the Twitterverse or something and let me hear it and we'll decide. Johnny, Tim, and myself as a group will have a council meeting and decide what we do with the intro music for the show. So now that that's taken care of, let's go ahead and get to know each other with Pretend You're Getting to Know Us. And in the light of the new arena, we have decided to pay homage to the Humdrum, the Frank Irwin Center, Club Irwin, and talk about what are our favorite and least favorite moments from the Frank Irwin Center. Who wants to start? Tim, you've been chosen.
All right. Well, my favorite, there's a decent amount. There's a decent amount. I have two that I have a hard time differentiating between. The first one is when Texas beat Oklahoma TJ's sophomore year. I think Oklahoma was rated like fifth or seventh. I don't remember exactly what it was, but they beat Oklahoma that year. And that year in particular, as I would imagine would be true for most Texas fans, is very special for me. So good crowd. People expected Texas to be good that year. They were good. That was very exciting. The other one would be DJ Augustine's sophomore year, like DJ Augustine and Damian James. They had gotten beat at Texas A&M by like 20 or something like that a few weeks earlier. I remember driving down the interstate and hearing the score. Like, it was like early enough that Texas, like, games were kind of still a little bit sparse on the TV. There were some that weren't there, or maybe like kind of, or DVR wasn't going on or whatever. But then I watched the Texas A&M game at Texas, and DJ Augustine had been in a slump, and AJ Abrams hadn't been playing very well. And I think Texas got out to like a 21-4 lead in that game, and the crowd was just going apeshit. AJ Abrams hit a pull-up three. Augustine hit a couple of pull-up threes. Damian James had, like, within the first 3 minutes. This is all like within the first 3 to 5 minutes. Damian James had a sick, like, alley-oop dunk. Fran Fraschilla was there, just like goes like, "Oh, the verticality," and like very excited. And it was just that game was really cathartic because, you know, Durant had left the year before. Augustine was struggling that year. And then when they kind of turned it on against A&M, that was really the start of a much better season for them. So that Oklahoma game in, I guess, 2003, and then that A&M game in 07 were probably my very favorites.
So my favorite is actually got nothing to do with sports, but the thing I remember having the fondest memory of is seeing Robert Plant and Jimmy Page at the Irwin Center back in, I want to say, 97-ish, 96, something like that. It was that tour where they had, the album that they came out with that had Gallows Pole on it? Anyway, I didn't have good seats. I was up in the mezzanine. It was, you know, Robert Plant was about 6 inches tall from where I was sitting. But that was a really good concert. I really enjoyed myself. I had a very good time at that thing. A surprisingly good time, because while I liked them, I wasn't, you know, like a huge fan of theirs. So that was really good. The worst memory is the entire 1997-1998 Texas basketball season, where they had the whole Luke Axtell thing. They had the whole... This is the year Penders got canned. What?
for those who weren't really paying attention to college basketball
alive,
at that
is that what
point,
you're trying to say, alive?
Well, I was, I'm trying to do math here. I think I was 4 years old, 5 years old at that time.
Okay.
Not quite sure about the, you know, the intricacies of basketball at that time. So can you enlighten me?
I'm not sure what took you so long to get into the intricacies. I mean, most 4 year olds get it at that point.
I was a slow 4 year old.
Wait, so I was born in 80. You were born in 84, Will? No, sorry, 90. I'm sorry. Okay, I'm 13 years old.
There we
I'm
go.
Sorry.
You got math. All right, Johnny, so enlighten me about that 97-98 season.
Oh, my God. So, probably the highlight of that season was Mack Brown getting introduced at halftime to one of the games. I think it might have been the Kansas game where Texas lost by 30 points because they had Paul Pierce and a couple other guys. Yeah, it was they were like 14-17. There was the whole thing with Luke Axtell, his transcript getting faxed out to a newspaper or something like that.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
And it's part of what
by Eddie Orin is the as the story goes.
Oh right, yeah, Eddie Orin, the play by play guy for the basketball team now. So you know, some things wash off eventually, but Penders was sort of, he was probably kind of getting on the administration's nerves at that point, probably because of his bar bills around town. But yeah, he went.
Oh wow.
Went 14-17. It was sort of towards the end, and yeah, that's what that was the season that ended up getting him finally canned, and that's what brought in Rick Barnes. So the next year was better.
That was a tough year, though, too, because they had that year had Mim, who was a McDonald's All-American. I want to say Axtell was a McDonald's All-American, too, or at least a top 50 player in the country.
Yeah, so he was supposed to be way better than he ended up being, yeah.
They had Chris Clack. They had Juan Vasquez. Like, there were, I think.
Chris Clack is an awesome name. That is an awesome name. Chris Clack.
I think Maneki was maybe a junior or senior that year.
Midnight.
Okay.
Yeah.
So like that team had a ton of talent. Yeah. I mean, it's not as if they weren't there, but that was.
Yeah. Everybody loved Luke Axtell until he left and went to Kansas, and then everyone hated him. But yeah, they would yell Luke whenever he would get on the floor. Yeah. Mim was a freshman that year, so in theory that was supposed to be a pretty good team, and it just, you know, the wheels fell off early and often with that team.
Damn. Well, I guess I'll go with my favorite and least favorite moment. So we'll start off with the favorite moment here, because the least favorite will be a good intro into the next topic. The favorite moment, it has to do with my brother. And my brother at the time, it was what, 2002, 2001, before Texas had finally gone to the Final Four and then everything got expensive and ridiculous there, and people actually wanted to go to the games. So this was before they really cared, is basically what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
And that'll make sense, because during the half times, during the TV timeouts and whatever, kids like myself and my brother would just run around the stadium, and it was totally cool. Adults would sit anywhere. It was just like a big, hanging. It was like you're just hanging out,
yeah,
like with a family hangout time. What happened was the ref gave my brother a ball to dribble, and that's how much they really didn't care. So he gave my brother the ball during a TV timeout, but the ref wasn't expecting my brother to dribble away from him and run away with the ball. So the ref is chasing my brother around the stadium while everybody is cheering for my brother. This is against Kansas, by the way, and he was pushing the end of the TV timeout, and the ref was like, fine, fine. And made a hoop with his arms, and my brother shot it. Everybody cheered. But that's the time my brother almost made national TV for playing basketball in the Frank Irwin Center court.
And he was probably like the 10th best player on the Texas team at that point. So
probably, yeah. So
preferred walk-on. Preferred walk-on, definitely.
John Baser, the preferred walk-on. But then the least favorite part, and it's not a singular moment, it is basically every time Texas plays a team like Grand Canyon University and Providence and Radford. there's nobody at the games. The atmosphere is terrible. The scene in Frank Irwin Center, every time they play a bad team, is just atrocious. It is empty seats everywhere. The crowd is often outdone by teams from the middle of nowhere. So,
hey, they bring like a solid 50, 60 people, so they're at least as big as the UT crowd.
Purdue's crowd definitely outnumbered Texas, but VCU's crowd out-yelled Texas by a lot.
Yeah.
Purdue, there is boiler-up chants throughout the entire game that you could definitely hear, and Texas tried to start these measly Texas fight chants, but they just didn't happen. So definitely those are my least favorite moments from Frank Irwin Center, is when it is the humdrum.
That and your brother, who's a grown man, is still running onto the court on every single game whenever they let
it. That's just John, and everybody just knows him at this point, and like, it's okay.
John. Yep.
It's John, whatever. No, you know, there is a guy who I do want to shout out on the show as one of my favorite Frank Irwin moments is the guy who did the Wabash cannonball dance. There was a student who was, a heavy set dude, okay, who knew the entire Wabash cannonball dance. And every time they would do it, he would do it in the stands. And finally, I think over his senior year, he would run out on the court and he would be this heavy set dude, definitely dressed not like a cheerleader, and run out with the cheerleaders, all these really pretty nice girls around him, and he's doing the Wabash cannonball, the high kicks and everything. He's pretty much my hero. Every time the Wabash cannonball is on, I think of that dude, and I kind of do a little jig. So, honorable mention, favorite moment, the Wabash cannonball dude. The least favorite moments, though, the fact that nobody shows up for this game kind of leads us into this next topic. As Texas just announced their $338 million basketball arena that is going to be in the Mike Myers Stadium parking lot.
It's actually just going to be the parking lot with a couple hoops. They're very expensive hoops.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting venue. Nobody's ever done it before, so we'll see how it goes. But seriously, $338 million, and none of it will be taxes. None of it is going to be the people paying for it. The land is fully owned by the UT, and there will be no public money used for it. So that's a plus.
Huzzah.
Especially for you Austinites out there. That's really nice. I mean, that's a bet. That's exactly what you want for all these professional deals. And this is a public university doing that. You know, there was a professional soccer team asking Austinites to pay for their stadium. It happens all over the NFL. You know, shell out $300 million for us and we'll build a stadium here. Texas fans don't have to do that for Texas basketball, which is really, really nice.
Tim's in Iowa. He didn't give a shit.
So the team will be moving into the stadium around 2021. So it's still a little bit out there. But here's the real big part of the story. Well, there's two parts. This is the first big part. 10,000 seats. Seats, 15,000. But it will be blocked off by
lasers.
According to the renderings, some really super cool arena lasers or screener banners or whatever, laser screen banners, combination of everything.
Holograms.
That 10,000 seats is a far cry from what Frank Irwin does now, which is a 16,000 seat arena. Tim, I know that you're upset by this. Do you want to kind of explain what's the deal?
What's the deal with enough people?
I don't think it's arguable that there are maybe no Power 5 teams that have quite the lack of home court advantage that Texas does. You just talked about it. I don't want to say ad nauseum, but ad half nauseum. We don't have a fan base that is at large super duper knowledgeable about basketball. We don't have a fan base that is all that excited about hoops just in general. So knowing that, I had hopes that Del Conte would really maximize the fan experience by taking kind of a point from a lot of other college basketball teams that look kind of like us. And we're not, I don't know if our listeners have ever been to Cameron Indoor. Cameron Indoor seats about 8,500 people. It is genuinely a field house that, like, was built in the 30s. Super low ceiling, wooden seats everywhere. Places like Oregon and New Mexico, which I think were better programs then, but, like, are probably closer to us than the North Carolinas and the Kentuckys and the Louisvilles of the world, who can genuinely fill an 18 to 20,000 seat stadium every single time they play basketball. We can't. So the number, when I look at the number of, 10,000, like, and they just keep on talking 10,000 seat, 10,000 seat, 10,000 seat, and I can appreciate that. But in Des Moines here, there's an arena called the Wells Fargo Arena that's downtown Des Moines, and every year they have the state basketball tournament that's there. So a few years, and we had like a three-year run from my high school where we made it there every year, and what they would do is they would take these huge black curtains, and they would totally section off the top half of the arena. So like any of the upper deck stuff was just simply black curtained out. And I remember thinking as I saw that, like, well, I understand why they do that. And of course it kind of, I guess maybe improves sight lines, or it doesn't take, if they have the black curtains there, it doesn't take your interest away. But it also felt like that is some ticky-tack shit. And like, that's some high school basketball tournament in Iowa, in an arena that seats 16 or 17,000. Well, now they're talking about doing that for Texas basketball. And not only is the ceiling not going to be low, but the lower section looks like, and we'll see if the renderings make it, actually are what it looks like. The renderings make it look like the Irwin Center. Like, it goes out. It goes out like a bowl. The carbon footprint that we've seen for this new place looks like the drum. Like, it's in a very comparably sized building. So it's, on the one hand, I like that they are going to say, hey, we're going to hard cap it at 10,000, whether we're playing Grand Canyon or Kansas or North Carolina or UT Arlington or whatever it might be. That makes sense to me. But they are not, this is not a Texas basketball arena. This is a large music or a large whatever kind of venue that will happen to also host Texas basketball games. So this is not a place where Texas can say, this is our home, where even if we are struggling, fans will feel this intimate experience where they can hear themselves be loud and know that they're making a difference for the team. This is not a place where other teams are going to come in and feel intimidated. And then on top of that, they're keeping Cooley. Like, so they're going to have this, not old, but not new center where Texas basketball is not going to be able to have their basketball pavilion right next door or someplace where they can go easily to their basketball arena. It's a ways away, and it's not particularly new and nice anymore. So it feels like, if this new place wasn't fantastic, maybe at least they would have their basketball pavilion there. Okay, well, they don't have that. Well, and it just feels like you keep on adding on and adding on. And so I'm glad they don't have to pay any money, and I'm glad they're going to cap it at 10,000, and I'm glad it's going to be nice and shiny and pretty and new. But this is not a place that's going to differentiate Texas from other places. Like, it just isn't. And there are still four or five places in the Big 12, Allen Fieldhouse, Hilton Coliseum, West Virginia Coliseum, I think it's called, Bramlage at Kansas State. There's places in the Big 12 where you can find an actual real home court advantage, and Texas is not moving in that direction. And I hope they would, but if we have this place for another 40 years, I don't see how this kind of setup is going to lead to that, even in the future.
Tim, you ignorant slut.
Okay.
Sorry. Let me see if I can tackle this in fairly short order. One, we don't know what it's actually going to look like because they don't know what it's actually going to look like. The renderings are pre-alpha stage. It's not a beta. It's not... They don't know even though the mechanism for how they're going to section off the upper level yet. So this stuff is very tentative. So,
but that doesn't matter.
It does.
It doesn't matter how they section off.
Well, but it matters because the renderings are at best a fever dream at this point and not the final thing. So there is.
That's fair. But enough space for 5,000 seats between that lower mezzanine, or like the lower area, and the ceiling is going to be cavernous and nothing.
Well, okay, so if we... let's set that aside because, again, we got to set it aside because we don't have the final drawings yet. So we don't know how high that ceiling is going to be, how they're going to section it off, whether it's actually going to be closed off in any like a reasonable manner or not. They could entirely fuck this up. It is entirely possible. I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm saying I want to see the actual final drawings rather than what looks to me like they just put new colors on the Irwin Center and said, artist rendering. Like, that's the outside. Like, all of this is like screams to me like, hey, we made this prototype of a car, but you know, you notice that the side mirrors are a third the size of legal side mirrors because it looks pretty. Like, so I'm not drawing firm conclusions yet from it because they themselves do not have the mechanisms sorted out for things. So it is going to be significantly different than what we have seen thus far. I mean, own admission, they don't know how they're going to close off that 5,000 seats yet. So
it's going to be with lasers. We know it. We know it's going to be lasers.
Right, lasers in the hallway.
So we're going to go through a company that can't do that shit?
We didn't say
that doesn't know beforehand?
They haven't broken ground yet, man. Have you ever built something? Like, they haven't.
I sure hope they have.
Well, they got 2.5 years to figure it out, and maybe it fucking sucks. Maybe it doesn't. Like, I don't know whether it will or not. But the fact of the matter is, what we saw are artist sketches, not CAD drawings, not anything tangible. So,
but Tim, I do understand the. What you're saying here is that where do you put those 5,000 people, and it's going to raise the roof here, and as you said, cavernous. There's no getting around that with what you're planning to do, and whether or not the drawings are correct or not, I understand what you're saying. Even if they do put the fans more on top of the stadium, the roof will still be tall. I don't know if that's. I mean, yeah, I guess it won't give it as much of an intimate nature.
Well, okay, hang on. Let's okay. Hilton is what, about 14,000 people, give or take? Like, that's, I think, Hilton,
like 16 and a half, almost, yeah. or close to 16, yeah.
Okay, that ceiling is not tall, and it gets loud in there. And so there is the ability to do that with a smaller audience. But if we're going to look at this pragmatically, if you don't want taxes to pay for it, you got at least out to an event group who they're going to make it a multi-use venue. So
exactly.
Which,
and that's wonderful. And that, and
it's not wonderful.
Texas,
it kind of sucks that they did it that way, because it means that they're going to put in Page and Plant or whoever, because they want to have concerts in there. So like 300 days out of the year, it's going to be a concert venue. So you're not going to get the bandbox you wanted. I'm not getting the bandbox I wanted, but at the same time, it's not hard to improve upon the drum, because, frankly, that place is a fucking mausoleum. And it doesn't help that half of the fans in the lower bowl are old enough to be in a mausoleum. But it's still, like, I'm not as averse to this as Tim is. But at the same time, I also understand the reality of a $300+ million facility that I have put exactly $0 towards. So I can bitch online and through the podcast, and that's about all I get to do.
But here's the thing is, what I completely agree with Johnny. Like, you can't complain about that, because, I mean, you can't change them making this into an event center like the Frank Irwin Center. Because they need to replace that. Austin is saying you need to replace that. UT knows they need to replace that to get the money. And they're going to do that. They're definitely going to do that. There's no way we're going to get around that.
Also, can I... But, hang on. Let me...
No,
I'm sorry.
Johnny,
before,
no,
we
stop.
Got, we got, no, we got one... We got one... I got one other thing I'm going to say, and then, Will, you can mute me for like 20 minutes, and it'll be fine.
Cool.
Denton Cooley, as it presently sits, is a quarter mile away from the site where that's going to be. That is one lap around a track. If these sons of bitches cannot make a 400-meter run from Denton Cooley over to there until they figure out what they're going to do on the on the future practice facility, then we got bigger problems than the distance involved. Like,
maybe it'll become a cool pre-game thing where win sprints. Watch the basketball team run from Cooley to the new stadium.
Yeah. We just set up like a police escort that they flash the lights red and let them go haul ass north for about a minute, but, and, 85 seconds or so.
Right, but here's the thing that's right. You can't change the fact that they're going to have that 5,000 fans above the 10,000 fans thing. You can change how the bottom adjusts, but here's the thing that I really do enjoy about Cristel Conte is he knows he can't change certain parts about this. He knows it has to be an event center, but what he is going to do, or what they say in the press release, is that the 10,000 seat arena will provide an intimate, state-of-the-art men's and women's Longhorn basketball fan experience, and I bold this part, feature student seating surrounding the court. So no longer will they be just on the ends, but they will be surrounding the court, or at least they were in the rendering. So the old people, the people Johnny says belong in a mausoleum, will no longer be occupying those seats. They will be reserved for featured students seating.
Yeah, they'll have the mausoleum box suites around the
It's also going to force the old people to stand so that they can see what's going on, or I guess they can watch the basketball going on the big screen. But still, I am really impressed by his cojones to say, hey, you old donors, move back 10 sections. So
I want to see if he actually does it. I mean, to say it. It's another to kick football donors out of prime seats. So we'll see. Like, I hope he does it. I hope he puts them close to the court so that, at least when you look at it on TV, it doesn't look like some sort of cocoon reboot happening behind the bench.
Yeah, but I mean, you get that at Maryland games. That's one of my favorite parts about watching Maryland play on TV is the first five sections around the court are students. That is student seating. So they are right next to the court, and they are yelling. They are rowdy, and they give that it's not like an intimate arena either, but they give that place a home court advantage by them being students right on the court. That is what I am hoping is going to be going on in this new arena coming in 2021. But here's a question I have for y'all. TJ Ford statue or no TJ Ford statue? What do you think?
I'm for it if it's a TJ Ford and Rick Barnes statue.
Rick Barnes in 2021, so he's still coaching.
Yeah.
He could coach against you.
Yeah. He's the best coach they have had in their history, so yes.
I'd be fine with TJ alone, but
either way. What about KD? A KD statue?
I mean, his name's all over enough. Like, he's got his jersey retired. See, his name is on the practice facilities that Tim hates, so... it's enough right now.
I think he should get a plaque on a wall somewhere, but I don't think he gets a statue. Tim?
You guys can go fuck yourselves.
Awesome.
When we sit here in 10 years and the Irwin Center is quiet as fuck, and, the only thing that's going to change this, and here is my frustration.
Okay, so we're back on this. All right, cool. All right, Tim, what's up?
No, like, look. The only thing that's going to change this.
Tim is fired the fuck up. Holy crap.
Yeah, I love you guys. I am not happy with you.
Let's go,
You Jack. Are playing into, Johnny, you're playing into exactly the same shit that you and I dream about all over the time, all over the place. The only thing that's going to change this is if Shaka goes to the Final Four. That's it. If a coach gets to the Final Four consistently, that will change. Otherwise, the seating that we see right here, what we see from this arena, you may well be right that we don't know the renderings right now. We don't know what it's going to look like. But this seems like the kind of arena that's going to say, all right, Texas fans, you're right. We're only going to get you here if we win big. And if in 10 years from now we're still, a top end of the Big 12, but maybe not the very highest end, and they're not coming because I will only support a winner. Call me when Shaka Smart is no longer the coach. like, okay, then we'll see. You know, I fundamentally disagree about this arena being something that, like, I think it will be nice and pretty and people will like it because, you know, it's going to have nice new places where you can get popcorn. But I don't think that they did Texas basketball any favors. And it frustrates me to think that you look at what they're doing at the football stadium and you look at what they just did for the tennis team, that they have an absolute state-of-the-art tennis facility that is perfect for those tennis players. And we are not doing the same for our basketball program. I don't know. And we'll see. But even if they do it really well, I don't think we're going to look at this and say, well, this is the best it could have possibly been. Now, they could maximize what they have with this. That's certainly possible. But from what they're talking about, I don't think it could ever be, well, this is the best it could have been, but I like, you know, I think this would have been even better given the circumstances. We'll see. But if in 10 years from now, Johnny, you and I are answering questions about, well, if only this coach would win at a higher level, then we'd show up and then we'd have a better experience.
Dude, that's going to happen regardless. If we are not making Final Fours every third year, that's going to happen regardless. That's just Texas fans, man. Like, you might as well just start punching water at that point and trying to, you know, like that's like, you know, I forget who the Greek general was that decided to punish the sea by throwing rocks in it. That's basically going to be Tim with the Texas fan base.
Like, maybe.
They're just, I mean, look, if that's a whole other, that's an adjacent but separate conversation that we can have at some point in time.
It's not, because it's different for you and me, but it's not different for those kids. It is not different for the players who want to come to Texas and play for something special. Like, maybe. Yes, for you and I who follow it for 20 years, 30 years, 50 years, but for those athletes who want to come here, it's that's a different level. And maybe as a college athlete, and well, you were a college athlete. Like, you're aware of what we're talking about here.
Kinda. Okay. Yes. I do. You want an environment. You want a good environment. Yeah. I get that.
Well, I mean, we can't bitch on the one hand that why don't we get Quentin Grimes? Why don't we get these best players? And well, because fucking come to one of our games. Come to one of our fucking games. Like you said, Purdue outdrew us. VCU outyelled us. Like, what really truly high player? Like, you go to NC State and watch that team play at their home arena, and they go ape shit. And then you watch us play, like, whoa, I'm not going to show up for Texas Southern.
So, Tim, here are two things that I would say may, if they do these, would be maximizing what they have with this. Instead of curtaining off the top, they could figure out some technology to not lower the ceiling, but have like cut off the top part so it feels more intimate. Mm-hmm. And the seating, instead of that bowl arrangement where you have something like the Big House where you're sitting a mile away from the stadium, you have something like what Texas A&M has with Kyle Field where you're sitting, they kind of steepen the edges more so that you're more on top of it.
Oklahoma State.
Right. Mm-hmm. Exactly, like Oklahoma State. So if those two things happened, if Texas fans started asking for those two things and yelling at Chris Del Conte and they finally did that, would that appease you?
It would. But so if we go back, all that we've heard about this, about the corporation or the entity that is working with Texas, and they're giving us this amazing deal and we don't have to pay a dollar and wonderful. I shouldn't poo-poo that. I apologize for doing that before. I shouldn't poo-poo that. But they should know. An entity like that should know what a good basketball venue looks like, what the seating arrangements in a good basketball venue should look like. And I know that it's nitpicking, but whatever fucking artist that they chose or whatever circumstances they were looking at, a place like that should know a good basketball venue goes up. Any good sports venue.
We're going to find out where that artist lives and we're going to go and burn his house down.
Yeah, sorry. That was in jest, people.
Please don't take me to court on that or suspend my Twitter account.
I sit at home in my basement and I drink Jim Beam and I play Xbox And I love Texas basketball so much. There are very few things in the world that I want to excel as much as I want Texas basketball to. And if I kind of got the impression that Chris Del Conte was an AD that would look at Texas basketball similarly. And I had real hopes that maybe we would come out of this thinking like, yep, slam dunk, no problem. This is for sure. He's just like he's done everything right with football. He has that same thought process with basketball. And maybe he does. Maybe we'll come in a month from now when we see the actual specs and we see precisely what it's going to look like, maybe so. But I don't know that you can look at it right now and say, yes, I 100% believe Del Conte is going to do the same things for our basketball program that he did for football. And that just hurts my heart that just hurts my heart because I thought TCU did it right. When he was at TCU, he did it right.
So let's go ahead and put an end to this discussion now. Tim, you got the last word on this one. So
thanks.
I'll let you have that.
Sorry, Johnny.
But I'll let you have that. That's the last thing I'm going to let you have. Let's go ahead and head on down to present day and look at the Grand Canyon University game. Now, that was about as good a game as Texas has played all year, maybe aside from UNC. 72.7% from free throw, 58.7% field goal shooting, 53.3% three-point shooting. It was
like 1.4 points per possession or something like that, Johnny, I want to say, like something ridiculous.
Curran Roach killed it off the bench. Courtney Ramey had 10 points. 8 assists, 2 steals. He did give it over 4 times, but Matt Coleman had a good game. Jackson Hayes, 9 points, 6 rebounds, killed it. And even Drayton Whiteside nailed a 3. The bench went crazy. I mean, there were not many things that went wrong with that game. And one of the big problems with Texas this year has not been finding the open shot, but it has been hitting it. Now, I know it is against Grand Canyon University that they're hitting these shots. But how do you replicate their ability to hit those shots in a game like Kansas State or Providence or something along those lines? Is this replicable? And if so, how do you do that? If not, how do you try to get as close to what you did against Grand Canyon University?
I don't know. Tim just sort of killed my will to live with this whole rediscussion. If we look at Grand Canyon, I guess the way to look at this is that if we have been preaching process, or if I have been preaching process to this point of executing to get the open shot, and that is about the best you can do to reliably execute to get open shots, then what they did in Grand Canyon is replicable in that they were able to reliably get open shots. Now, whether those shots go in or not, that will vary from evening to evening. There are not going to be many nights in Texas history where they hit like they hit that night, regardless of who is playing, who they're playing against, and who is on the Texas team. I think it is the one thing I would caution against is that Grand Canyon is not Kansas State. They are not Kansas. They are not, you know, Texas Tech. There is an ability to get in the lane against Grand Canyon that will not be as easy to attain against other teams. So as much as I enjoyed the passing, as much as I enjoyed how crisp everything looked, a lot of it is that the process is not a ton different. It's that the outcomes were hitting properly over and over again, like getting on a hot streak at Vegas. It's not that you're throwing the dice a ton differently than you have been. It's just you keep hitting the numbers you need to hit.
One difference I guess I would maybe point out there is if you look at the context of that, of the last couple of games, in Michigan State, Radford, VCU, it was one of those circumstances for the whole team where it felt like it could have been any of Ramey or Long or Roach or Coleman that brought the ball up and maybe initiated the offense from the first part of our action, but all roads led to Kerwin. like towards the end, like there was any late shot clock stuff, or if our initial action did not lead to a decent shot, we funneled the ball to Kerwin. And that made some sense, right? Because he had a great game against North Carolina. And so we were coming out of that context of, hey, look at what he just did. Maybe we do have that guy on our roster. What has been different the last couple of games is we are seeing whoever it is of Texas' kind of four-headed combo slash point guard personnel of, again, that Coleman, Roach, Ramey, Long, where they are playing fast. And they're playing fast consistently. And all four of those guys can get into the lane early. All four of those guys can make a defense, rotate, and adjust early. And so when we have everyone kind of hunting their shots, well, I think Febres took 10 threes against Grand Canyon. I want to say, like you said, Ramey had 8 assists. Long had 5 assists, or 4 or 5 assists. Roach had 5 assists, I want to say. Coleman had 3 assists. Like all of our better playmakers, everybody was doing it. And that was an opportunity for us to see, all right, Shaka says we want to play fast. Shaka says we can, you know, we can have this trust and comfort with really anyone on our roster getting some of those looks. And while Johnny is 100% correct that we just cannot play at that tempo against Kansas State or Tech or Baylor or Oklahoma State, no one's going to let us play that fast, right? I just don't think that they're going to – they're good enough teams in the Big 12 Conference that they won't let us do that. I don't think we have to play quite that fast, and yet we can still be pretty successful. And there is no question that when we do play with tempo, we're a better shooting team. We get better offensive looks in the first place. We have more opportunities for our bigs to run the floor. Those kind of things just kind of seem to work out for us. So can we play fast enough? Can we play make well enough early in the shot clock that we can do that? And this is a nice game where Shaka could say, see, told you. I told you if we play fast. I told you if all of our guards get into the lane fast. I told you if we can make them rotate and adjust early, we can be good. So from that standpoint, there's plenty good to be taken from that, even though we know the competition level is going to step up quite a bit in a couple weeks.
As much as I enjoyed that game, and as much as I would probably prefer to watch that over some of the upcoming efforts that might happen, it's there are two questions that remain to be answered I'll say definitively. One is how they attack the hard hedge, because Grand Canyon doesn't do that, and Texas has not yet shown that they can answer that. The second is how they handle a 2-3 zone, because that's going to come at some point or another, and Texas, those two questions are going to likely determine the arc of the season, because those are the offensive questions that I have.
And those are legit questions. One thing that I would say Texas has done a little bit to calm my nerves with that, the first is we were attacking before we were set. So we weren't even waiting for our offensive personnel to get set before our ball handlers were getting into their action, right? So they couldn't hedge because we were attacking even in one-on-one situations early in the clock. The other piece of that is I do really like that wrinkle of that triple handoff up at the top, especially when they get Coleman as the first and third ball handler, where he can be moving where he's already at full speed, or whoever it is that they can already be going at full speed. That is another way that I think Johnny is right, that hard hedge that we just struggled, we just did not turn the corner, we did not split over and over and over again against VCU, Michigan State that second half, and Radford. But if we can utilize some earlier sets where we go ahead and move early, if we can utilize that triple handoff where we allow ourselves to be on the move and we're already being able to turn the corner because we're going at full speed, I liked those wrinkles. It tells me that they were seeing that, you know, the staff was seeing a lot of the same stuff that we're seeing, that if we're going to have those problems, we have to find some ways where we can alleviate that inside of our normal sets.
Another question I have about this game, and it's sort of becoming a trend here, is turnovers. Texas has been on a bit of a turnover bender over the past few games. This time they had not as many, 11, but maybe that's not a big deal.
It's not.
If they have like 20 or 22 assists, something like that, I want to say.
Yeah, 22 assists. And they turned the ball over on 15.7% of their possessions, which
yeah.
they mm-hmm. are averaging 17.5, which is top 100 in the nation. So
all right, like, so never mind.
Yeah,
never mind. Screw that.
Well, no, so it's a legitimate thing. Like, if they're going to play this fast, you're going to have more turnovers. That's just the way of it. And you need to allow guys like Eli and Courtney to play through that, because if they don't, then you know, then we can't say, hey, we want you to play fast, we want you to play free, and then be upset when they have some turnovers, because that's the natural way that it is when you play that quickly.
Okay, and then I also want to talk about Jackson Hayes here, because Jackson Hayes is really playing his way into the NBA really early here.
Yep.
We thought it would be Jericho Sims would be the guy, but Jackson Hayes is playing with Tristan Thompson and working his way into the NBA as an early entry. Like, he is really having some of these NBA scouts salivate.
Yep.
And it seems like it's more than just his ability to, you know, his athletic ability. Well, I mean, I guess it is mostly his athletic ability. I mean, he has hands like a wide receiver.
Yep.
Lance Blanks, a former GM, was talking about him not fumbling with the ball when he gets it in the paint. When he goes up for a slam dunk or an alley-oop, he's not fumbling with the ball. He is really, really athletic in his ability to handle the ball in rapid motion, which is, you don't find that often in those big men. It's kind of going more towards where the game is going with faster, more lightweight big guys who can shoot. But Jackson Hayes is a guy who, my dad has always said, Kevin Durant was too small to go to the NBA because he was just too, not too small, but like he was lanky and wasn't thick enough for it. But he ended up being, you know, what Kevin Durant is today. You can take a look at Jackson Hayes and say, you know, he might not be ready today, but in a few years, if a GM can take a look and see, okay, there's so much potential there, then I can definitely see why they would say, yeah, he's on the NBA big boards and is definitely a first round guy.
Yeah, I mean, he's ready today to be a rim runner in the NBA. He doesn't have the sort of outside shot that distinguishes some of the other guys, like, you know, is not Anthony Davis, but, you know, Giannis is starting to shoot some threes a little bit. Mo Bamba is starting to shoot some threes here and there. Like, Hayes doesn't have that, although I will say that his free throw form suggests that he could develop a maybe not a three-point shot, but a longer distance shot than he's shown thus far. Yeah, it's almost like having a NFL tight end coach as a father might pay dividends in your ability to catch a pass. I thought that Hayes was going to step in next year as the, you know, next Sims, but it appears that there is no next Sims because Sims is going to be Sims here probably for his junior season. Which is fine in and of itself. He's a fine college player, and you know he still has a lot to tap into. But I don't have any inside information on this, but it does seem like everyone is noticing Jackson Hayes for good reason. And I mean, unless he just really enjoys college, it seems like there's an increasing chance that he's going to be playing professionally, you know, 12 months from now.
That kid has no fear, no hesitation, no fear. He runs super hard. He, you know, is very comfortable finishing on difficult catches right at the rim. He wants to just, you know, what was the game? Was it at West Virginia last year when Sims took the ball and dunked on Kanate? I want to say, like, I remember, yeah. Like, he went baseline or whatever, and anyways, and I remember thinking, like, oh, let's go, like, what an emphatic way to say, like, this is who I am. And then we haven't seen a whole lot of that from Sims, whereas it's felt like all year long Hayes has just shown that and shown that and shown that. And it seems like Hayes clearly has some weaknesses. He's not a great defensive rebounder. He'll get better, no question about that. He's not a wonderful defender when he has to be in space, although he'll get better at that too. But his strengths are so freaking strong. He's so good at what he does well. And he, again, there's not a lot of hesitation or nervousness about his game that yeah, you can see where a lot of GMs or anyone that would be associated with professional basketball might say, well, he can't do this, and maybe he's going to struggle with that. But man, oh man, there is no question that even against NBA talent, he's going to go up and get it. He's going to attack the rim. He's going to finish with authority when he can. And if he can keep on working on that whatever 6 to 8 foot range, turn over his left shoulder and hit the right, you know, the right hand jump hook. I mean, that's even if it's just that move, with his length and jumping ability, that would make him pretty hard to guard even at that level.
So I wanted to do an angry fan comment this week, but we're running low on time here.
Okay, you got burned up by angry Tim comment.
Yeah, that was, we kind of got this that already.
That's like the first time I've ever actually expressed that kind of frustration in like
on the show
70
yeah.
shows. Come yeah. on.
And I am going to kick you in the balls over it for the next 70 shows.
So real fast, here's my really quick angry internet fan comment, and one of y'all really quickly address it, please. Kamaka Hepa sucks. Why?
He's a freshman. Had a freshman okay. game.
Yeah. 7 for 27 shooting, 6 for 22 from three. Hot potato with the ball. He sucks. Why?
Yeah. Freshman. Had a freshman game. He's fine.
Cool.
He doesn't suck.
All right.
You're wrong.
All right.
So now for the next 48 minutes, Tim and I are going to argue about this.
Let's go ahead and finish off the show with Providence. So tell me, who are they and what do they do well?
Well, they are coached by Ed Cooley, who he does a lot of things well, not one of which is wear pants. Because he has a tendency to rip them. Okay, actually, it was just once. He did rip it and had to wear a towel for most of a game on TV, which was pretty awesome. I thought they were going to be a bigger test heading into the season than maybe they will be. They're not a bad team by any stretch. They were looking like they might kind of contend for an NCAA tournament bid at some point, you know, as an at-large sort of bubble team. They have lost A.J. Reeves, who is their best freshman, for I think it's 4 to 6 weeks. Or maybe it's 3 to 5 at this point, with a foot injury that's going to cause them some problems and may end up sort of being the reason why they're on the wrong side of the bubble come March. But they're a good three-point shooting team, but they do not shoot a ton of threes. So maybe you could say that they're a good three-point shooting team because they are very selective about when they shoot it. They have a player in Alpha Diallo who, he's not Carson Edwards. But he is a very good player and he could, take over the game by himself if Texas lets him. Although again, because A.J. Reeves is out, it's possible that Texas can key on Alpha Diallo more than they would have otherwise.
I think he's so good because of his first name, Alpha.
Yeah, like, he's not Omega Diallo. He's Alpha Diallo. Yeah.
Yeah.
I kind of like Providence. It seems like one of those programs that under Ed Cooley has become, I'll call it relevant, in that they can come up and bite some better teams here and there, and they are, you know, they're sort of in the conversation for NCAA tournament spots. So they're good enough that they can provide a very good test to any team on a given night. Texas should be favored in this because, you know, that massive drum home field advantage will really come into play. But they're a good team, but they are a beatable team. And if Texas plays even halfway between what they did at Grand Canyon versus what they did at Radford, they probably should win this game. But we'll see if they can get halfway there, or they're only like a quarter of the way to Grand Canyon.
And Providence has struggled a lot this year offensively when they have played good defensive teams. I mean, that seems like a pretty silly statement, but their best wins or their times where they have not struggled have tended to be against teams that are not very good defensively, and good defensive teams have kept them to pretty low point totals, you know, like sometimes even in like the mid to low 50s, not different than what we've looked like in the past too. So I think that Texas will be maybe the best defensive team that they played. So I could see Providence, as they're still kind of maybe scrambling a little bit to figure out who they are without Reeves, we'll see if they can score enough points to hang in on the road. I like that Texas seemed to allow both Purdue and Grand Canyon to kind of play fast, but we didn't lose our defensive integrity. Again, if Edwards had not had a Herculean kind of effort against us, that would have been a blowout. And I think if we can continue to find a way to play somewhat up tempo, but also keep our defensive integrity in those games, Providence will probably struggle to score at a level that I think that we can if we play with the same type of emotion and intent like we did the last couple of games. So they've got some shooters, they've got some length. Cooley's a pretty good coach, honestly.
Yeah.
But I don't think that they are quite ready to compete with a team like Texas at Texas when we can defend like we can and if we get into our action as early as we have been able to in the last few games. Like, they're not as good as, I think Purdue would probably boat race Providence, and I expect us to win relatively easy, you know, in that probably 8 to 15 point range, something like that.
I mean, yeah, but this is the same team who beat Villanova last year, so they're not, like, I don't want to undersell their competitive ability.
Sure.
So how will Texas win this game, and how do they lose it?
Well, they lose it by not making any shots. I mean, I know that's sort of reductive, but if they go back to shooting 25% from three, they're going to have a hard time. I feel like if they lose this game, sort of to Tim's point, it's going to be one of those 54 to 51 kind of games rather than an 80 to 77 type
fight.
Games.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Right now, Texas is hitting just a shade under 33% of their threes, which is enough for the rest of the offense to function. So if Texas can continue hitting one out of every three three-point shots or slightly better, they're going to be hard to beat. So if Texas is going to win by limiting Providence's open three-point shot chances and executing well enough that Texas gets open three-point shots.
So I think we're getting off Providence there, but before we end off the show, there is one thing we missed because of the back and forth on the stadium. The main bullet point about the new stadium, Matthew McConaughey, Minister of Culture. What do y'all think?
I think that he should be the first Texas alum that is allowed to ride Bevo into an arena.
Is he an alum?
Yeah, he went here.
Okay. Okay.
So he went to Texas, therefore he's an alum. And yeah. So, yes, I say if you're going to make him the Minister of Culture, the first home game at the new arena, he gets to ride in on Bevo to really just announce himself.
I'm pretty sure everybody would be completely okay with that. Matthew McConaughey has kind of gone in, I don't know if it's jump the shark is the right term for this, but he's kind of become everybody's joke favorite fan of the Longhorns. I don't know if he's even a joke, but I'm pretty sure there would be people who are pretty hyped to see him walk in ride in on Bevo.
I'll take him over Toby Keith every day of the week.
For real. Who is A&M's star? Is it Robert Earl King?
I think it's just a photo of a dead frog.
So, Tim, what do you think of Matthew McConaughey, Minister of Culture? You're not okay with the renderings, but are you okay with the Minister of Culture?
Well, I think there's only three words that can express how I feel about it.
Oh, God.
Good, fine, okay. And that's the only way to put it. There's just no other way to put it.
Oh, man.
That was not the three words I thought we were going to hear, but all right.
Mm-hmm. Good, fine, okay.
All right. I think on that note, we're going to end off there, y'all. Thank you for pretending we were football for the past hour. I have been your host, Will Baizer. You guys can find me on Twitter at WILLBAIZER. Johnny Brashear, where can we find you, man?
So you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at BitterWhiteGuy. You can no longer find me on Facebook because I deleted myself from that hell site. So, hooray. I'm out of the matrix.
And you are on Discord now.
Yeah, I am on Discord. I sort of understand how that works vaguely. So, yes, I am on there.
And Johnny, where in the world is Tim Preston?
He's currently firebombing an artist village.
Is that it?
No, no.
We don't know how he's doing it. He is firebombing an artist village somewhere.
I gotta take the earpiece out because I can't concentrate while he's doing that. Timothy Preston.
Yeah.
Tim is currently the main admin for a Facebook group called Jehovah's Witnesses for Jesus, where he spends his days trying to convert Jehovah's Witnesses to other forms of Christianity. Not because he believes in them. He just really likes changing lives. Doesn't matter if it's for the better or for worse. He really wants to be the single defining change in a person's life.
I am super blood transfusion.
Yeah.
That's my main platform, blood transfusion.
That's the only reason he's doing it.
Yep.
So, Tim, besides on Facebook, on Jehovah's Witnesses for Jesus?
Jehovah's for Jesus, yes.
Jehovah's for Jesus. Where else can we find you on the internet?
JFJ. InsideTexas.com and on Twitter, InsideTexasHoop, no S. We have an awesome community. Come hang out with us.
Or in your fucking face on the basketball court.
Boom. Right in your fucking face.
And you guys can find us and our other shows right here on the Hornscast channel. That's the Hornscast channel on Spotify, Podbean, iTunes, Google Play. Anywhere you can find a podcast, you'll find the Hornscast. And thank y'all for listening, and we will see y'all next week. Hook 'em.
Hook them.
Johnny, there was somebody on Twitter who said, all I want for Christmas is for Johnny to say hook 'em.